Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world effectively manage risk. For access to free educational tools and resources for the active individual trader, please visit activetrader.cmegroup.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudele sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudele.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in for this episode with Ken Smithmeyer. Remember, new shows are posted on Mondays and Thursdays. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes and YouTube. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a review on iTunes. Before I play today's interview for you, I want to give a shout out to the great sponsors of Futures Radio Show. CME Group, Trading Technologies, RJO Futures, and Top Step Trader. To learn more about these sponsors and the important things they are doing for futures traders, be sure to click on their logos on our website. Now today I spoke with the Director of Research Agricultural Markets at Clipper Data, Ken Smithmeyer. We chatted about his decision to get into the futures industry right out of college and why he decided to be an independent trader focusing on grain and oilseed option spreads. We discussed the current state of the grain markets, how the trade deal is impacting commodity prices, and he gives us insight on the global ag markets. Last but not least, Ken shares with us the key risks and areas in wheat, corn, and beans. So without further ado, let me take you right to the interview with Ken. So Ken, you started in the physical side and future side of the ag business right out of college. You started with ADM, and then you were working at the Kansas City Board of Trade. Curious why you went this route right out of college.
Yeah, so I knew I didn't want to be an accountant when I was in college, and I actually grew up around Decatur, Illinois, which at the time was the global headquarters for ADM. And so I'd had some background and experience with the company growing up, people I knew that worked there. And you know, I mean, Decatur, Illinois is just corn and soybean land. And so out of college, of course, financial markets were of interest, and in particular commodities, given where I grew up. And so ADM seemed like a natural route for me. They were gracious enough to send me to Kansas City to start, which for a newbie in that company in their merchandising and trader trainee program, that's a pretty good spot. I just started from there. I mean, I didn't know anything about the wheat market, didn't know anything about the corn and bean market. And I was lucky enough to have, great people around me, great bosses. I was lucky enough to have an opportunity to join the group, with ADM at the Board of Trade there in Kansas City. That's basically where I started learning. I had bosses that had been in the wheat market, you know, their entire career. So to be able to understand the physical side of the market, and then relate that to the future side of the market was a great thing for me, and it still pays dividends to this day. So great experience. And after 5 years there, was lucky enough to have a job take a job with David Hightower and Terry Rogensack of the Hightower Report, and that's where I started on the research side. With that group covering the corn, soybean, and wheat markets. So I kind of gradually expanded from just focusing on the physical wheat trade to then, you know, branching out into the agricultural commodity markets as a whole.
Very cool. I love that you started into futures right out of college. Yeah, very seldom am I talking with anyone on this show, unless they were starting in the pits like I did, start in futures right away. They somehow find their way to futures. I'm just curious, before we move forward, did you even know what futures were while you were in college? Did you have any idea what you were getting yourself into?
I knew what the markets were just from my studies in college, you know, finance classes and so on and so forth. But I went to St. Louis University, which is a school, of course, in St. Louis, Missouri, and there's no agricultural program there. So I didn't go to a University of Illinois or Iowa or something like that, where they specialize in markets and sectors like that. So my only background into the futures and options market was just basic, bland, you know, blanket education into that side of the business. And then, you know, there's a lot of do-it-yourself homework, right? I mean, I did a lot of my own reading, actually most of it after college while I was at ADM. I took the agricultural commodity, the brokerage exam while I was at ADM. Just, you know, I wasn't going to be a broker at ADM, but I wanted to learn more. So a lot of it was, you know, just work on your own. A lot of reading, a lot of note taking, a lot of asking questions. And even after all that, you're still not a pro. So,
yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, I even go back to my career and how I started in the meats, and then I worked in the Eurodollar options and eventually found my way into the S&P, where I finally found a home in a market that that fit my personality. And I know throughout your career, like we said, you started at ADM, Kansas City Board of Trade, and then you talked about working with Hightower, and then you went on your own. So you had a good sense of markets and you learned a lot about yourself in the industry, but then you went on your own to become an independent trader and you started trading grain and oilseed option spreads. Why did you decide to go and trade those markets?
Well, I mean, my background was of course corn, soybeans, and wheat. And, you know, I thought I had a pretty good foundation of the market. From a research side, from a fundamental standpoint, I had, you know, gotten an endless education from my colleagues at the time at the Hightower Report. And so I think personally for me, it was one of those things where I just wanted to give it a try. You know, I had or still do have a very close friend that is a professional trader in the wheat market. He was doing it at the time. so it wasn't something where, you know, they're doing it, so I'm going to do it. It was just something I wanted to see if I could do. And I feel like to a certain extent, you know, when you're when you have your own money in the market and the decisions that you're making, you know, certainly dictate how you pay your bills and what you eat and what you can do going forward. You know, the definition of money, I feel like, takes on a whole new meaning. So it was one of those things where I knew at that point I had a very high level of interest and passion for the commodity markets, but specifically the agricultural commodity markets. And with my fundamental background and with you know, a decent background on the futures and options, and more specifically the future spread side, just based on my experience in the physical markets, I thought it'd kind of be a natural transition. And I did it for 2 years or just over 2 years. Like most traders will say, it's a grind. It was a grind. It was very difficult. But I wouldn't swap that experience for anything else, you know, at this point in my career. I've just learned endless amounts you know, not market knowledge, but just about yourself, you know, about the grind and lessons learned, you know, when to trade, when not to trade, things like that. So it was an experience that I wouldn't take away whatsoever.
Yeah, I've said so many times on the show, trading is a journey of oneself. And I've been doing this. It's going to be my 20-year anniversary since I started, and I still feel like I'm grinding every day. And yeah, going back to when I said, you went on your own and started trading grain and oilseed option spreads. I chuckled a little bit because it's just so rare that I have somebody on the show that says, hey, you know what? After everything I learned in the industry, that's what I'm going to trade. It's not the most popular area of the market. So that's why I was very interested in, as to why you chose that. And to me, it sounds like it was because you had a very strong fundamental understanding of those markets. So you felt that you had real strong footing going in and understanding them. Did you know anything about technicals? Did you use any technical analysis?
Yeah, I mean, I should clarify, when I was trading spreads and options, they were, you know, two different products there. I was trading options in the market, but then also the spreads within each market. So my background on the spread side was, you know, came from my commercial experiences. So, having a fair understanding of the physical markets in corn or soybeans or wheat, and even the relationships between the different wheat classes. So, understanding the Kansas City wheat market relative to the Minneapolis wheat market, or the Kansas City wheat market relative to the Chicago wheat market. So those are all spreads that a lot of people still do trade. And then on the options side, that experience came from the people at the Hightower Report mostly. David Hightower is a great educator and trader of options. I had great experiences there, learning, understanding, modeling different options strategies. And so that type of trading just, it was attractive to me. And I felt comfortable in both those, using both of those tools to, you know, to try to make money in the market. So that's kind of where I started.
Talk to us about what you're currently doing right now with Clipper Data.
So at Clipper Data, I'm the Director of Research for Agricultural Markets. So Clipper Data is what we specialize in is point-to-point tracking of commodity flows and dry bulk and container ship movements. So we have relationships within the maritime industry. We use satellite technology and we collect data that shows us, what a vessel is loading, where it's loading, where it's going. And, we've been very heavy in the energy market since 2013, but we've started to make an impact in the agricultural market. And that's my primary responsibility is building research based off our data and getting it out to the market. And it's, I think one of the interesting things in the agriculture market is the trade flows are really evolving. We're seeing big demand out of Southeast Asia. We're seeing big, loadouts in the Black Sea region. South American agricultural exports are growing. So, you know, when you look at the global picture, the flows are really moving in different ways than they were, you know, even 5 years ago and certainly 10 years ago. So, you know, to have highly granular and timely data at your fingertips to be able to see those trade flows where you couldn't before, that's highly impactful. I think if you're a hedge fund, a physical trader, an analyst, so that's what we specialize in. We look for patterns and anomalies within the trade flows globally, for agricultural products. That's my primary responsibility.
All right. When I looked at the grain markets before I got on this call with you today, because it's not something that I trade or watch too often, but I always do keep a little eye on them every now and then. And I looked at the wheat daily chart. I looked at the soybean and I looked at the corn. And what it looked like to me was really like a lot of sideways action. I know that they've probably been very busy for those that have been trading them, but when you look at it from the perspective on a daily chart or even a weekly chart like I did, it seems like there's just a lot of sideways action. I didn't really see a trend in those markets. Like I said, it seemed more sideways. What is the current state of grain markets?
Sideways. I mean that's just what it is, but it's kind of typical for this time of year. I mean, once you get into the holiday time period, so I'm talking that November, December period up through basically February and March, it's typically a slow time frame for our markets. The U.S. harvest is done. The Brazilian harvest is starting at this point. So, we're watching weather down south. But, the trend or the lack thereof in a trend is it's symbolic of what's going on, which is not a whole lot. It's kind of interesting that even with the trade talks between China and the U.S. that, option volatility still can't find a bid, which is, really been the theme in the grain markets for the better part of, 4 years. But I do think that once we get closer to March, we'll start to have a little bit more weather to trade, both in the U.S. and globally. When you talk about, wheat in the Russia, Ukraine, Kazakhstan area, and then wheat here at home too. And then we're also going to get data points from the USDA on what farmers are going to plant for corn and beans in the U.S. this spring. So I think that, markets are calm, sideways, not really sure what to do, which I think is fine. I think there's probably some capital on the sidelines that don't really know what to do at this point. Also, it seems like, you get one trade rumor fluttered out there from Bloomberg or Reuters or whomever else, and you could have a position that's upside down, even though you've got a good fundamental base for putting it on in the first place. So I think there's some clarity that's needed. That one last unknown, which is if that trade deal is going to get done or not. And I think once that's known, I think the consensus is that markets will go up. I'm not sure I'm necessarily in that camp. I just think there's capital on the sidelines that's waiting to be deployed. And I think if you clear up some of those unknown factors, what we're left with is a lot of grain and a lot of oil seeds around the world. And that's not bullish. So
you say the trade deal is really the focus right now. And you also mentioned that you think that the consensus is eventually this will drive grain prices up. But is that based on what happening with the trade deal, right? Because, I have kind of, I don't want to say put a blind eye to all of the news and headlines on the trade deal. I'm just basically waiting at this point to see what ultimately is going to happen, because I don't think anyone can really anticipate it. So if you think that consensus is going up, is that based upon what happening with the trade deal?
I think consensus is thinking that markets will take on a bullish trend if there's a deal, based on the fact that if there's a deal that China will resume, U.S. grain and soy imports at a pretty rapid pace. I don't think there's any evidence to suggest that at this point. I think that, if nothing else, China has, and you're right, there's no way of knowing how this is all going to unfold. But I think the one thing that's, probably certain is that this has been a pretty good, learning experience for China to figure out, how to secure supplies so that they can maintain, adequate levels of feed for their food market. And, ultimately that's one of the most important things, for China. And so, you know, much like in 2012, when we had a very, very disastrous drought in the United States, and China was, you know, striking deals with Ukraine to buy corn and doing some other things, I think this is just one more opportunity that they've taken to maybe strike new deals, to, you know, import new item, new feed ingredients that they hadn't before, that could be put into their supply mix. So, you know, I think that, you know, look, I think we all want a trade deal, and we'd love for the headline influence to maybe tone down a little bit. I know I sure would. But I think there's probably been some structural damage to the relationship that, at least on the agricultural side of the market, I just don't think can be fixed, because it's actually maybe to the betterment of China. You know, they've been able to define new ways to get around, you know, lower supply from a key exporter. And that's, you know, it's pretty important for them, I feel like.
So we talked about how the grain markets, specifically talking about corn, beans, and wheat, when I look at them on the chart, it does look like a lot of sideways action. We talked about how the trade deal is pretty much the primary focus of a headline or a fundamental backdrop that everyone's waiting for. How much of this sideways action do you attest to fundamentals versus technicals?
Yeah, it's a little of both. I mean, you know, you take beans, for instance, today, you know, we had some nasty fundamental news yesterday with some Chinese export purchases that were canceled. And, you know, we traded down a dime, a little bit more. And then, you know, here today, we bounced back a little bit, up 2 cents. But, you know, we're still in an uptrend from the September 18th low. I'm looking at the March contract. And that's kind of been for the trade, at least, a kind of a major trend line in the sand for the market. You know, but on the flip side, you know, the market can't get any upside momentum, you know, above the 200-day moving average, which is coming in, I think, probably around, you know, 915. So it's a little of both. You know, we're working in the within some technical parameters, and corn's kind of the same way. I mean, you can draw a 10 trend line off the you know, the August 2018 high, and you know, we've bounced off that, you know, once in November, once in December, and you know, probably a dozen times from January 1st all through today. And that's looking at the July contract. So, you know, the only one that looks like it's clearly breaking down to me is wheat. But you know, if I've learned one thing, it's you better be darn sure about what you're doing if you're going to be selling Chicago wheat that's, you know, already down almost 20 cents in the last 2 days. That just doesn't seem like a good risk reward, in my opinion. But you've had some really soft, bearish trade out of Europe. Matif futures have been off. The Black Sea cash markets have been off. So, you know, you do have some global softness that's kind of seeping into the Chicago contract. But that's the only market that I can see is trying to work on some type of, you know, pretty extreme downside move. But corn and beans, they really have just been a back and forth market. I mean, if, you know, corn trades down 5 to 7 cents over a couple day period, you can bet that it's going to recoup all of that within the next couple days. That's just been the market. And, you know, personally, I feel like corn is a little overvalued. I think the strip is a little overvalued. You've got, you know, what we call the new crop contract, December 2019, sitting here at 399. You know, that seems a little rich, but I think the market is really just waiting to see what the government says as far as planted acreage in the U.S., you know, here in March, and then we'll kind of decide what we want to do at that point.
I know that you're primarily fundamental based, but you have mentioned some technical analysis, moving averages and trend lines. Can you just give us what you believe are the technical analysis tools that you like the most, that you use the most?
Well, I don't use moving averages very often. The only ones I typically have on my chart is the 200. I don't really go any shorter term than that, but I'm not day trading. So I think that probably has something to do with it. One of the things that maybe isn't purely technical, but that I do look at every morning is write down changes in volume and open interest. I feel like that's probably not a real meaningful tool if you just look at it, once a month, but if you continue to look at it every day and keep a running track record of what the changes are, I think that can be very helpful to maybe provide some context to certain moves in the market. Outside of that, I use retracement markers, just like I think lots of people do when they're targeting, downside support zones or upside resistant zones. Those are typically on my daily charts, but I typically don't go any further inside, on hourly. I'm typically looking at hourly, daily, and weekly, and even monthly charts. Over time, I've just gotten more comfortable of using more of a longer term view of the markets instead of, trying to figure out, why a market is doing this and what it did, on a 5-minute basis. That's just not, kind of how my mind works. I tend to go for a longer term view, and maybe that's why the only moving average I use is a 200 day. And,
No, I get it. You have to play to your strengths. Sure. And we mentioned that fundamentals are your strengths. And recently you said that the global ag market is in just another step in a long transition that we've been in. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. So, I think most people that follow agricultural markets and for those that don't, I think that the main story when you talk about the transition to the global markets has been wheat. And that's been the consistent downtrend in U.S. export share in the global market, and the consistent uptrend in market share for countries within the Black Sea and Baltic region, and that's been going on for years and years. And there's all kinds of ideas of why that's happening. I think the main thing to understand is that, countries within that region are pouring in investment capital into the sector, and that's helping. They're expanding port infrastructure, they're building new ports, and they're growing production. So that's very meaningful. And so I think that, when you take that and look longer term, you get worried about if that ever starts to happen with the corn market, or if that happens with the wheat market, or with the soybean market. And, back in, I mentioned 2012 earlier, when we had that drought and you had China, buying corn from Ukraine. I mean, that was a pretty big deal. And now all of a sudden, Ukraine's a top 3 to 5 global corn exporter. Prior to 2006, there was never too much talk about Ukraine corn production and export potential, I feel like. But now, they're a meaningful factor. We watch their pricing over there. We watch what their production is over there. We watch what their rate of export is over there. So they matter, and they're just one more competitive market in the world. And now we have what's going on with China and the U.S. and beans and the growth we're seeing in Brazil. It's really amazing what they're doing down there. You've got, just handfuls of new ports that have opened up in the northern tier of Brazil. This region's called the Northern Arc, that have been in operation really since, I think, 2015 or 16. But they're just exporting an immense amount of product now at this point. you know, wait times for vessels have shrunk in Brazil. That used to be a big story in the grain markets. Oh, we've got 70 vessels lined up, and now the port strikers the port workers are on strike, and we can't load any beans. That used to be a big, deal to some people, but it would create, you know, little bouts of volatility here and there. We no longer hear about that. They've got so many new ways to export their product now in different locations that they're really becoming a major powerhouse. You know, I think one of the major things that we need to watch in the agricultural markets going forward is what China's doing with their One Belt, One Road campaign. And this is a massive supply chain overhaul that they're trying to roll out, you know, between, you know, China, East Asia, Southeast Asia, Europe, Black Sea region. You know, and how that changes, it's going to be really interesting to see how that changes commodity flows in the future. You know, do we see, you know, what new railroads are going to be put up and what new shipping routes are going to be going? So, you know, I think that this is just, again, one step in the transition and evolution of global agricultural trade. But I certainly feel like there's many, many more chapters to this book going forward. And it's going to be very interesting to see. I worry that the U.S. is not at the forefront of that evolution. And, you know, I do feel that, I mean, the U.S. is always going to be a major player in the global export market of corn and beans. Especially beans. I mean, the beans are only really grown in mass in, you know, three countries in the world. But, you know, things change over time. And you really hope that, you know, we're not cognizant of what is, or really hope that we're not complacent as to what is going on in other areas of the world. Because if nothing else, we you know, we want to continue to grow market share and have stable supply relationships.
Before we get into rapid fire, I wanted to know if you could just quickly go over some of the key risks and areas traders should be watching for in wheat, corn, and we'll say beans.
Well, I think wheat is going to start here in the next, you know, month or two. You're going to have wheat coming out of dormancy. So it's going to be very important to see quality, both in the U.S., Black Sea region, Canada, Europe. Places like France and Germany are major producers within the European Union. So I think that's an area where I think people kind of got to be on their toes. And more specifically, maybe in the U.S., we have a very, very low planted acreage estimate here in the U.S. for this year. So, you know, we need a crop. We got to produce something. And so I think it's going to be important to watch weather this spring. And then around the same time, corn and beans, you know, we're in March, we're going to get our first look from the government on how much we're going to plant. That's going to be massively important to the price pattern for corn and beans, basically from March through the summer. So I would almost argue that come March, factors like that are going to matter more than this trade deal. So I think those are the things that the market is likely going to transition to, you know, really over the next 30, 60 days.
Great stuff, Ken. We have some rapid fire segment questions next, if you're ready for those.
Go ahead, shoot.
All right, everybody. Our rapid fire segment is sponsored by Trading Technologies. Access the global markets from virtually anywhere with TT. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. And now you can trade cryptocurrency spot and derivative markets side by side. For more information, please visit tradingtechnologies.com. Ken, first question for you. What trader has influenced your life the most and why?
David Hightower is my boss at the Hightower Report in Chicago. He taught me an endless amount of knowledge with futures, options, and not only in agricultural commodities, but in macro markets. Taking what currency markets are giving you and what financial markets are giving you and relating that to, you know, basically agricultural commodity markets. So that was very meaningful, and the education I had there was top notch.
What was one of the hardest things for you to overcome in trading?
Over trading when you're up on the day. That, by far, just putting, you know, clicking the button on your mouse to turn it off. It's still hard to this day, that when you have a good day or you've had a good week, to just hang it up. So
how has your trading process evolved over the years?
Well, when I first traded on my own, it was more of a intraday trading spreads, except for the option side, which was a little bit longer term. And I just realized over the years that wasn't for me, that didn't fit my mold. And so, you know, now when I do trade, it's more of a medium to longer term position. And mostly now those are still through the option market.
What is one attribute that you believe every trader should have?
Risk aversion. And, you know, certainly I think everybody needs a little bit of risk or has to take risk. But I've always kind of, and I'm sure you'll ask this question later, what do I like to do when I'm not working? But one of my favorite things is to be outside hiking, mountaineering, things like that. And I've always thought there was a pretty strong parallels between, you know, doing things like that and trading. So, you know, there's always some, you know, possibly some inherent risk, and knowing when to do something and knowing when to not do something. So I feel that's pretty important.
What's your favorite book about trading?
When Genius Failed, no doubt.
What's your favorite movie about trading?
Enron, Smartest Guys in the Room. I believe it's a documentary, but I just thought it was an unbelievable story and an unbelievable collapse, and it's worth watching.
What's the best piece of advice that you've received about trading?
Well, a friend of mine in Kansas City who's been a longtime wheat trader, he would always say, just, you got to stay in the game. And so I feel like that's pretty sage advice from a veteran wheat trader.
If you could go back in time and give the younger you a piece of advice, what would it be?
Probably to go out on your own and trade at a later date, to have more experience underneath your belt. That would be the one bit of advice that I would have gave to myself, is to be patient and don't force it, and try it when you're ready.
If you had an elevator pitch me your edge in agricultural market research, what would you say?
Granularity of data. I think in the global grain markets, the more transparent and timely you can have data, especially with global trade flows, the better.
Last question for today. What's your favorite thing to do when you're not trading?
When I'm not trading, I'm going to be outside. I'll be hiking, climbing, kayaking, skiing, any of the above. Those are all in my wheelhouse.
Ken, where could people find you on Twitter, and give us a website to check out?
So you can find me on Twitter at southtrader.com, but at southtrader. And then the website for Clipper Data is www.clipperdata.com. We also have a post on there where it our blog posts that various analysts from the firm put out. You can click that. You can see information there. So,
Ken, this was awesome. Thank you so much for coming on Futures Radio Show.
Hey, thanks for having me today, Anthony. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.